Well, Harden, yeah.
That's a good excuse, Howie. How long will you keep that one?
But another 2 years, I think, at the last.
Okay. Evening. Sorry, I was a little bit late. So, thank you. What I wanted to talk about this week, and why do we do that, is there's a lot of issues that surround, I realized, dinner etiquette. I don't mean like which fork do you eat with first if there's a lot of forks. I mean like there's a lot of things that we do at a meal which are sort of like, you know, stuff that you sort of see some people do and some other people don't do, and you kind of wonder what are we really supposed to do and why on earth is this happening. So there's a few different things. I want to talk about one thing today, and that is the concept of Maim Achronim, which I translated as afterwaters, because I like the translation. But afterwaters, and that is, you know, you've probably seen this thing at some point. This thing, there's like a little cup, and it has water in it, and everyone sort of like spritzes their fingers with it, or they dip their whatever. There's a little bit that goes on your fingers, and there's like the bottom of the cup has like a dish saucer thing where the water goes, and you cover it, or you take it off the table, or you don't take it off the table. So that's what I wanted to look at today. What is this stuff? What is this Maim Achronim? Why do we do it? And we know that the general practice is that men do it and women don't, at least amongst Ashkenazim, is that men only are doing it.
Why not?
Men are doing it and women are not doing it, so that's what I wanted to look at. What is this thing? So that's what I wanted to look at today. What exactly is this thing that we do? Do we wash hands before you say Birkat HaMazon at the end of the meal? And why are we doing it? And what is the basis for it? And what are all the details? That's basically what we'll look at today. In order to get involved here, we find that in terms of understanding why some people do this and some people don't, because many people don't do this, and then some people do it with various levels of stringency, we'll see that there are basically two sources in the Talmud which describe why this happens. What exactly are we doing when we're involved with these afterwater, Mayim Achronim stuff? So, we see that there are two. We'll get through the first two, and then we'll see how people treat them in terms of how this stuff emerges ultimately. So if we look in source one, this is one of these examples. As we've seen in previous weeks, there's a concept in certain circumstances of preparing your hands for something. If you're going to make a blessing, if it's the beginning of the day, and you know, just like the priests in the temple would wash their hands before they would start to pray, so there's a concept in lots of different places of preparing your hands to pray. And it's a similar idea, a kind of parallel idea here, that if your hands are dirty, you shouldn't be making brachas, you shouldn't be praying to God, you should clean your hands and have clean hands before you start to make blessings. And so we see that the concept of Mayim Achronim, of this water that you wash with at the end of the meal, emerges out of a need to clean your hands. That's the first kind of source. So we see here Rabbi Zuhamai Omer, which is an interesting name. Rabbi Zuhamai said, Kashem Shemezuham Pasul La'avoda, Kach Yedai Mezuhamot Psulot Labracha. Just like a priest, a person who's dirty, who's filthy, is disqualified from doing the service in the temple, so too our dirty hands, the person's hands are dirty, cannot recite blessings. Damar Bihuda Amar Rav, Va'amri La B'matnita, because we have a source, it's not exactly clear where it came from, that says, that dissects a pasuk, which says, it's not really talking about washing your hands, but homiletically we understand it to be, V'hit kadashtem, v'hitem kadoshim, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. That's the word. What it means is, you'll sanctify yourselves and you'll be holy, because I, your God, am holy. And the way that this is dissected here is, it's referring to different things that you have to do with your hands in terms of preparing them before you can make a bracha. So we say, v'hit kadashtem, you'll sanctify your hand, you'll sanctify yourself. Elu mayim rishonim, this refers to water that you wash with at the beginning of the meal. The four, I translated as four waters, I had a little bit of fun with the translation. The four waters, the first waters that you wash with at the beginning of the meal. V'hitam kadoshim, and you will be sanctified. Elu mayim acharonim, these are the after waters at the end of the meal. Ki kadosh, because sanctified zesh shemen, there was a practice at a certain point that after they would wash their hands, they would put oil on their hands also as a kind of like, I don't know, moisturizer or something to make your hands nice. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. That's the bracha. So there's like preparatory steps before you start to pray. You're supposed to first wash your hands, then maybe put oil on your hands, and then you start to make the bracha. So this is one source which describes this practice.
They would put oil on their hands even if they lived in the desert?
It's not clear, we'll see how this is treated. It's not clear at what point historically we're assuming this started to happen. Oh. Certainly today we don't do that.
But you have scented oils, though, you can moisturize your hands with, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they did that.
Sand, get on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was like in the desert, but at a certain point in history it became
But this doesn't refer to
popular.
In the desert.
I don't think so. We'll see historically that it's not clear that this was a hard and fast rule. But even this source, it sounds like it's talking about dirt. Yeah. If your hands are dirty, it's sort of like makes sense, right? If your hands are dirty, so you should clean your hands, and then you'll pray afterwards. Don't pray with dirty hands.
A general question: is this a custom, or is it?
Okay, so we're gonna see. In the course of the discussion, we'll see exactly how deeply rooted this is. Yeah. Okay, so that's source number one. This is about we'll create sort of I don't know where we're gonna put this. Evolving. Source number one is, let's call it, I don't know, dirty hands. Okay, that's reason number one. That's funny, but it's whatever. Okay, there will be reason number two. This is source that when we get to the point where we get to see how everything interacts, then I'll prop it up. But we have source number one of dirty hands. Source number two is another description where we talk about this concept. And here we already start getting into this question about why are we doing this? Is this a commandment? Is this a practice? Is it a custom? So we'll see that here. Amar Rav Idi Bar Avin, Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashyan, whoever this was, said this, Maim Rishonim Mitzvah V'Acharonim Chova. The four waters, the waters that you wash with before the meal, those are a mitzvah. That's a commandment. You have to do that. It's not a biblical commandment. I mean, it's not a biblical commandment at all, but it is a formal commandment formal rule which was established by the rabbis that you have to do this. You need to wash your hands before you eat. It's historically fascinating because it's based on the priests having to wash their hands before they ate, and subsequently we have to wash our hands before we. That's for a different time. The achronim, the after waters that you wash after the meal, are a chova, an obligation. So what exactly is the difference between a commandment and an obligation? We will find out soon. But that's the description. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Brei de Rabbi Chia. So Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Chia, explained, "Bnipnei ma'amru ma'im achronim chova." Why did they say that the afterwaters are an obligation? What obligates you to do it? If it's not a commandment, it's not some sort of religious practice, so what is it? Shemelech Sdomit Yesh. There is Sodom salt. Shemesame et hanayim, which can potentially blind your eyes. There's salt mixed into the other salt. We have the final note here that I included was Abaye said, "Umishkachat ki korta bekora." There's a very small amount. It's a quart's worth in a korah. I didn't look up the exact ratio, but it's a very, very small amount. There's some kind of salt. The Talmud calls it Sodom salt, like the story in the Torah of Sodom. Right, the wife of Lot, they're running away, and something turns into salt. The city turned into salt. She turned into salt. There's salt going on over there. What kind of salt is this? So it's actually true. I mean, it is the case. I don't. It's not really an issue for us today because we have very refined table salt. But if you dredge salt, if you make salt out of seawater, or you gets salt out of a pit, a small most salt that we have is sodium chloride. That's what, just chemically speaking, that's what it is. But a small percentage of naturally occurring salt, and some, maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe is magnesium chloride, which is much, much more dangerous. Sodium chloride gets in your eyes, it's not such a big deal. Magnesium chloride, magnesium is like, it's a serious burn. So there is some small percentage of salt, which is very dangerous, and if you rub it in your eyes, it's a problem. If you're eating a meal, you have salt there. They didn't have refined table salt, so there was some small percentage of the salt which was dangerous, and we don't want that salt to be on your hands after you finish eating, because you'll get in your eyes and it'll burn your eyes. Yeah.
But there's a couple of premises here. The first one is that back then, I mean, you had to preserve meat, especially, well, poultry meat or whatever, in salt, otherwise it would go bad very, very quickly.
Okay,
so
true.
You always had that. Number two, kashrut, you had to obviously salt your meat. And number three, you ate with your hands. So there was always going to be a chance that you would be able, that you would have salt on your hands. But we don't eat that way anymore, and we don't live by having to preserve meat with salt. I mean, we still have kashrut, but
right.
it's even more hands length away than it used to be.
Okay.
So the question becomes, even in spite of all that, why do you still need to do that?
Okay, so that's a very good point, and we'll see that people take this point and say exactly what you just said, which is that we don't necessarily have the salt around. But this is the second reason, which is, I don't know, we'll call it Sodom salt. Okay, so we have these two reasons which have sort of occurred. I don't know if this will be useful. We need like a little table behind me to pick it up. But here's what for whoever can see this properly, this is what we have, and we'll sort of update this as we go. But these are the two reasons that we have. Either this is an issue of dirty hands, I don't know how valuable this will be, we'll see. Or it's an issue of Sodom salt. Salt that's going to stick and get into your eyes and potentially blind you. So we have these two sources. I mean, and if you look in source number three, Rashi, sort of one of the commentators here, fleshes out this idea. What does it mean that there's Sodom salt? V'amru chachamim, al kol achilatecha achol melach. We know that the rabbis have said in other contexts, we talked about it before, we talked about challah, that you're supposed to have salt there as part of the meal. It's either on the table or you put it on the bread. And maybe this is health advice also. And if your blood pressure is too low, you should always eat salt. Whatever, you have to eat, you should have some salt with all of your food. And therefore, since you have salt on the table, kevan de naga b'melach, since you're going to touch the salt, ki yahi ki hader yahiv yado a'inayim, mesam elahu lefikach tzarech lenatlan. When you touch your eyes afterwards, you're going to burn your eyes. And so this is purely pragmatic advice. Do not burn your eyes, wash the salt off your eyes, off your hands, so that it's not around and it won't be dangerous for you. So we have two reasons. One of them is very pragmatic. One of them is like halfway pragmatic. It's not a technical rule that you must wash your hands before you bench. It's a rule that you have to get rid of the dirt that's on your hands. That's what it sounds like before the end of the meal. So the question is, we seem to have two contradictory reasons. What exactly is the reason for this halacha? Is it because of washing the dirt off of your fingers and in preparation for saying Birkat HaMazon at the end of the meal? Is it because we're concerned about salt? And as we've heard, possibly that would mean that, you know, if we don't have this kind of salt, then maybe we shouldn't be worried about this at all. And so when you have this kind of contradiction, there's three very popular ways to go. Right, you can say one reason is the real reason and sort of sideline the other reason. You can say the other reason is the real reason and sideline the first reason, or you could come up with some sort of synthesis. Right, it's a classic like contradiction of A and B. You say really A is true, really B is true, or it's some sort of combination of A and B. And that's really what we end up with in terms of the way that people parse this. I'm going a little bit more in depth into this kind of analysis than we normally do, because it's important in terms of understanding why exactly some people do this and some people don't do this, and where this all comes from. So the first view, the first camp here that we'll see is the camp of Tosfot, which is in source number 4. Tosfot points out exactly what we've been thinking about until now, which is that wherever he lives, they don't have any of this salt that burns your eyes. I mean, I don't know if there was magnesium chloride there either, but whatever. He, as far as they knew, there was no dangerous salt. And this is in line with things we've seen from Tosfot before in previous weeks, that very often Tosfot will say, in the Gemara, they're concerned about this danger. We talked about the onions, peeling the onions and whatever, leaving peeled onions out overnight or whatever. So they had this danger. We don't know. We don't encounter this in our environment. So maybe that's not a problem now. And that's exactly what Tosfot does. Tosfot takes this reason and says, really, this is the real reason for this rule, and this is secondary. And so basically, we have to follow this. And since there's none of this salt around where we live, there's no reason to practice this anymore. That's what we see in source number 4. First, he does away with the pasuk. We seem to have quoted a verse that said you should wash your hands, v'hit kadashtem. He says, v'bracho b'sof perik eludvarim, as we saw in source number 1, darish charvayhu mikra david kadashtem, elumayim rishonim, v'itim kadoshim, elumayim acharonim. It seems that we derived these things from a verse, which is usually a very strong source. If the source in the Torah is telling you to do something, and that's considered legitimate understanding of it, so then that would be a serious problem, and that would require us to do it. So he says, no, v'asmachta ba'almahu. Sometimes we look at things which the rabbis seem to base on a verse. It's not really based on the pasuk. We just say that it sort of leaned on it. They came up with an idea, and they sort of found some sort of indication for it in the text, but it doesn't mean that they're saying that the text is telling you to do X. They came up with an idea of what you should do, and they found a sort of source that seems parallel to that idea. Doesn't mean they're telling you literally what to do based on the text. Fine, da tama de mayim achronim have mishum melech sdomi. But really, the reason for this rule of washing after you eat is because of this Sodom salt. Kedamar besamuch, he's commenting there. Va'anu lefi she'ein melech sdomi matsui beinenu lo nahagu b'mayim achronim. And since we don't have this salt around us, we do not practice mayim achronim in our place. It's pretty straightforward. So if we're going to go,
that's not what you said in the English. You're missing the knot.
It's happening to me all the time now. I'm leaving out knots a lot. Okay, so
last sentence between
it's
doing
serious.
The
knot. Yeah.
Your wife must be happy. You're always saying yes.
Okay. I mean, unfortunately, it's only working out
no,
on the source sheet.
I'm reading it. What the hell is he talking about?
Yeah. So, don't always trust the translation. My apologies.
Translator.
A is the real reason. Yeah, I don't know if we should trust me or the translation on the page. That's an interesting question. So this is view number 1 here, which is that A is the real reason and B is not any kind of reason. And he sort of sidelines this, and since we don't have the salt, we're all good. I don't know. But that's the idea. That's number 1. So, and then if we actually flip down to source 6, we get the opposite view, which is to say that, yeah, it may have something to do with the salt, but we know that it's a serious thing and you have to do it, and so basically this second reason takes precedence, and that we find in the Rif. The Rif is one of the very earliest commentators on the Talmud that we have sort of codify, trying to make a coherent attempt to explain what the halacha is supposed to be. So he says quite clearly, "Afilu im lo achal," in source 6, "melach kavu rabbanan chova." Even if he doesn't actually eat salt, any salt in his meal, there's no salt there at all, the rabbis established this idea that you have to wash your hands as a rule. Mishum de mayim rishonim he'echilu basar chazir, mayim achronim hargu et nefesh. There's a bunch of stories elsewhere, it's an extension of one of the sources we saw, which talk about dangerous things that happen to people because they didn't wash before the meal, didn't wash after the meal. There's the story of this person who comes in to a shop or something, and this person was watching him eat, and he doesn't wash before he eats bread. So the person thinks he's not Jewish. Like, this is a non-Jewish guy. He knows Jewish people. Mm. He knows that they usually wash their hands before they eat. This person didn't wash his hands. So obviously, he said he's not Jewish. So he sold them some pork, and the guy ended up eating the pork. And so the moral of the story was, since you didn't wash your hands, you ended up eating the pork because the person didn't know that you were Jewish. And there's all kinds of, and the Mayim Achronim has all kinds of dangerous stories. Somebody died. died because of it, somebody ended up getting divorced because of it, it was very bad. So the Rif says, you see that the rabbis have emphasized this is an important thing to do, so we know we have this rule about salt, but really this is the main issue, that you're supposed to do this, and that's the story. So that's basically number two. B is the real reason. And as we can imagine, source number three, or approach number three here, is going to combine the two things together and say it's not A or B. A applies in some cases, and B applies in some cases. It's a mix in the middle. And basically what we're going to say here is that there's two reasons why you would have to wash your hands. One of them is to get rid of the salt. And also, if you are the person that's going to say Birkat HaMazon, to make blessings, then you have to wash your hands. Why doesn't that include everybody? I mean, both of those statements. Because the original practice was that one person would say, person that that now we talk about somebody leading the benching, one person is leading it. But originally, what they would do was one person would just say all the brachas out loud, and everyone else would answer, because not everybody knew it off by heart. And it's better that way. In some places, they still do that today. It's less common. Usually, one person would say it out loud, everyone will say it in an undertone. Yeah.
If it's held at such importance, why is there no bracha for maimach?
So there actually are people that suggest that you should make a bracha for maimach. We don't do that. But there are those that hold that it's a very serious requirement. We'll say that you have to make a bracha.
But if you're not washing your hands the way you would before the meal,
yeah,
then you're not really washing your hands.
So,
Yeah,
we'll get back to exactly how much of your hands you have to wash here. And it's true that there's some amount of dispute. What bracha should you say? Is it the same as the one before? Do you say al nitilat yadayim? Do you say al rechitzat yadayim? I'm washing my hands. But there are those that suggest that you should make a bracha. This is the middle of the ground. One person used to do the benching. So what the opinion we're going to see now is going to suggest the rule about the salt is true whenever there's salt on your hands. So everyone at the table has to wash as a concern for salt. This rule about the Am I pointing the right place? Yeah. This rule about the bracha is only for the person that's going to be saying brachas. That's an issue of your hands being clean, the person that's leading the benching. And so he tries to cut it down the middle and say, this rule applies in some cases, this rule applies in other cases. And that's what we'll see here in source 5, in Rabbeinu Yonah, and there's many other people that have this view as well. Mitoch mashe katav Rav Acha, Meshavcha Gaon Zal, so based on what this earlier source said, Lamadnu Ikar Davar Zeh, Demai De Amrinan Hacha, Shuhu Mitzvah Mishum Kedusha, Eino Omer Ela Al HaMavarech. When we say that this is a mitzvah because you have to sanctify your hands, prepare your hands to pray, that's only referring to the person who's going to lead the benching, who's going to lead Birkat HaMazon at the end. Dekevan Shemazkir Et Hashem, Tzarech Sheyutol Yadav Kodem. Since this person is going to say the name of God, he should wash his hands beforehand. Kodem Shivar, before he makes the blessing. But the rest of the people at the table who are washing their hands, it's only because of this. So he tries to cut the split the difference here and find the middle ground, which includes both reasons. So that is, we'll call him Rabbeinu Yonah. I mean, that's his name. Yes. A is for everyone. And B is for the leader of benching. So this is basically our three possibilities. And as you can see, these three possibilities lead to three different options. Yeah, I realize this is only useful if you can read my handwriting, which no one, including myself, ever manages to do. So this, yeah, so A is the, wow, this it's really bad. Yeah, real reason, B is the real reason, A is for everyone, and B is for the leader. Only the person that's leading the benching. So that's what we have here. And as you can imagine, these three different ways of dealing with the situation lead to two or two and a half different ways of what do you actually do at the end. If we're going to hold like Tosfot, like this first interpretation, so then basically there's no reason to do this at all today. We have no salt, no possible version of salt which is going to burn your eyes, and so there's no reason to wash. And in fact, we'll see that there are people who say, bottom line, in terms of the halacha, what we do every day, is that there's no reason to do this today. The salt is not an issue. If you're going to hold like the second view, the second view says that I know that there's salt and there's no salt and whatever, but the bottom line is that it's clear that the rabbis thought this was an important thing to do, and so we have to do it anyway, even if the salt is not a factor. Maybe it's because of cleaning your hands before you bench. Maybe there's some sort of technical requirement. Even my hands are not really dirty. I have to clean my hands anyway, and we're sort of careful to do it. The third view, it might be variable. Everybody has to bench now, but if there's no salt, and if my hands are clean, and there's nothing on my hands, so maybe I can say, well, I don't have to worry about the salt. The salt's not here. I don't have to worry about the dirt on my hands before I start to pray because my hands are clean. So you just check your hands, and if your hands are clean, that's okay. If your hands are dirty, then you should wash them before you start to pray. Those are basically like the three possibilities. You really have to do this. You really don't need to worry about it. And maybe you should make sure you've dealt with all the factors, and if you have, then it's okay.
But if you do the third one, the day where you do have salt, you may forget to wash your hands.
That's true.
In other words, you do it enough times, you don't do mayim achronim enough times, you will eventually forget what it was there for in the first place.
That's true. I mean, that's an interesting point. It didn't seem to bother Tosfot, I guess, that historically they may end up in a situation where the bad salt will return. Presumably they would say, well, there'll be a rabbi there, and you'll ask the rabbi. The rabbi will say, oh, you're right, this salt is burning people's eyes. We better
But that's why when you learn Gemara, you still have to learn Karbonos, because,
you
don't have
a bit of
this, but one day we may have,
right.
We still have to know.
So that's why we're learning this now, so we know. So if the salt burns someone's eyes, you'll know that it's time to engage in this again.
You sprinkle salt in your eyes.
And see what happens.
Are we wrestlers?
Okay. So that's the basic baseline over here in terms of where the sources follow. What do we actually do in the end? So in source 7, the Shulchan Aruch, which is the standard certainly for Sfardim of practice, says very clearly, "My macharonim chova." After waters are an obligation. You must do them. Some people actually say this. It's a little bit of a dispute. Some people say this, like before they do it, they're like, no, my macharonim is a chova, it's an obligation, and you have to do it. I don't know for sure, but based on what I read, amongst Sfardim, is it a more widespread custom? I don't know what the reality is. But certainly the Shulchan Aruch says that this seems to be what you do. In source number 8, amongst Ashkenazi Jews, the Tosfot that we saw before, which is his first view, was an Ashkenazi from that region. It's from France, but whatever, it was that school. And so the Darchei Moshe, Rabbi Moshe Israelis, who's like the big decisor, the big posik for Ashkenazim, concluded that our practice, the practice in Ashkenaz, was to follow this first view, and they don't really do it. The same way that in Tosfot he says that we don't really do this. He says, Mihu minhag haminhag kedivriya Tosfot. The common practice is to follow Tosfot. So you have this split which sort of emerges. Among Sfardim, there's a much stronger basis to say that this has to be done. That's the decision of the Shulchan Aruch. And he follows either view number 2 here or view number 3 here, that you have to do it or it's an important thing to think about doing. And you have the Ashkenazi practice, which is not necessarily to do this. Okay. So those were the reasons which we found kind of in the Gemara. There are further reasons also, which are very interesting, some of the most interesting things I saw, which emerge out of the world of Kabbalah as well. It's not just a purely straightforward halachic analysis, there is also a Kabbalistic component as well. And that we see hinted at already if we look in source number 9, because we would have figured the story is over. If you're Ashkenazi, you don't do it. If you're Sephardi, you do it. We're good. We're all done. But it's never that simple. So this is source 9, and the second page is the comment of the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham is an Ashkenazi. He's writing a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, I know that he says, I know that it sounds like, you know, the Shulchan Aruch says you have to do this, and Mashba Betur in the earlier work, the preceded the Shulchan Aruch, it sounds like Dafka Hamavarech, maybe only the person that's leading the blessing, that's reciting the blessings. Umihu, however, Hamikubalim Katvu, the Kol Adam Yizaher B'mayim Achronim. The Kabbalists have written that everybody, or the Kabbalists wrote that everyone must be careful to use the afterwaters. So generally speaking, I just, you know, in so far, I've just sort of left it at that. I don't always know, and you'll see now why I usually do this, is I don't often understand what is going on in terms of the Kabbalistic reasons to do things, but there is a strong Kabbalistic reason to do this, and it was so fascinating that I had to put it on the sheet, because I couldn't not. So what exactly is the Kabbalistic assumption that requires you to do this? And I will explain as in my limited level of understanding here. There is, you know, in Kabbalah, a concept of the Sitra Achra, the other side. There, everything, all life, everything that exists, you know, descend, it comes down to us, is channeled down to us from God. But there is, you know, the side of good, kind of, and the side of bad. There's like a bad side. I don't want to compare it to Star Wars. There's a bad side, right? There's the Sitra Achra, the other side. And in certain very interesting circumstances, we sort of offer up stuff to the other side. Very interesting. One of the most prominent cases where this exists in the Torah is on Yom Kippur. There's a concept of a Sel Azazel. There's two sheep. I mean, this is not esoteric. This is in the Torah. There's two goats. One goat is offered on, that you take on Yom Kippur. One goat is offered as a sacrifice in the temple. The other is taken out by a person and thrown off a cliff, basically, and it falls down the cliff. And that is the goat that goes to Azazel. What exactly is that? What is that about? So one interpretation, if you read the commentaries, just simple, if you read the Ramban, there's a very classic commentary on Chumash, he says the idea here is that it's some sort of offering to the other side, to the Satan. It's not exactly clear. I don't exactly understand what that means, but that's the idea. So that concept is included here in the Kabbalistic interpretation of why we do Mayim Achronim. And this is from the Kaf HaChaim, which is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. He includes the other reasons that we've seen so far. And then he says, "Ubezohar HaKadosh, Parsha Truma," in the Zohar it says as follows. Part of it got cut off. That's unfortunate, so we'll read in English. The Holy Zohar has revealed the secret of the afterwaters as follows. After a person has eaten and enjoyed, he needs to give some of the leftovers to that side. And what is it that he gives? The afterwaters. The filth of his hands needs to be given to that side, the other side, as a portion, because it needs it. I don't know. This is certainly an obligation which lives in the... I wasn't sure exactly how to translate that, but that it's certainly an obligation. It's incumbent upon people to give him this portion, and it's a chiyuv, and you must do it for this reason. So at some sort of deep esoteric level, you're also giving some dirt from your hands to the Sitra Achra, to the other side, and this is also an important Kabbalistic reason why this has to be done. And this plays into, you know, meaning mainstream Kabbalistic understanding often plays into what we do halachically at the end of the day. And this is an example of that. The Magen Avraham says, I know that you have all these sources, and he knew that in Ashkenaz, at a certain point, the practice was not to do it and what the bases were. But nevertheless, the Mekubalim say that you should really do it. And when this boils down in the Mishnah Berurah, which is like the more, you know, it's a contemporary source that we actually use today, he says, look, I know the Shulchan Aruch mentions this fact that some people don't do this. And he says, look, I know that, you know, the Tosfot said that you don't have to do this. And I know that other people said that you don't have to do this. But there have been others who were very adamant that you must. The Vilna Gaon, and he quotes this Magen Avraham, and he quotes a couple of others who say that you must do this. It's a chova, it's a requirement, you're obligated, and you must. And so this sort of creates, in the modern day, a little bit of a schism, even amongst Ashkenazim. So there are people that do this, and they're very careful to do it religiously. Sometimes you only do it on Shabbat, which is not exactly clear, because really it should be done any time you have a meal, before you bench, or you should be washing your hands. And there are some people who don't. I remember one time I ate a meal with one of the the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, which is where I went to school, and we were eating on Shabbat, and it was about to be time to bench, and so we asked him, what about my machronim? And he said, well, are your hands dirty? And I said, no. And he said, okay, so then it's fine, so then we'll bench.
So
yes.
is this to pay off the satan, or to keep him occupied,
I wish I could answer you. I'm not exactly sure what exactly this means, but I just thought it was interesting to see that there is stuff going on there. If I could explain it to you better than I, if it's to pay off, it's to distract him. I don't know. I'm not sure.
So what do you do at home?
So at home right now we don't do my machronim, generally speaking. If your hands are dirty, you have to wash your hands. But so that's.
They do it here at the
shul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, I'm. But this is what people do. It created this thing where some people do it and some people don't do it.
You can
pour water over your hands. You make sure your hands are clean before you do waters. Yes.
You have to have your hands clean before you do that.
That's correct. So the four waters, the Mayim Rishonim, are not the same. Mayim Rishonim are a technical requirement that you have to pour water over your clean hands. It's really an issue of purity and impurity. And exactly. But this is not. This is either because of salt, because of dirt, because of something, and we'll see that plays into some of these rules as well. But that's basically
but
the landscape.
If you're Ashkenaz, which you are, I mean, you're supposed to follow the Tosfot, right? I mean...
It's more complicated than that, because you're following the Tosfot, great, and then it just sort of like shoots out in the other direction, because there are those who are, I mean, not even just for Kabbalistic reasons, they're just those who, the Vilna Gaon says, I know the Tosfot, I know da-da-da-da, but you have to do it anyway. The Aruch HaShulchan, who's also a big previous generation writer, says that Tosfot was just trying to explain why people in his time didn't do this. He never meant you don't have to do it. He just saw people around him didn't do it, and he was trying to explain why, but obviously would agree that you have to do it nowadays, too. And so there are people who are adamant about it, and so there are people that do it and people that don't today.
What's very interesting also is that, you know, none of the commentaries really say that not washing your hands will cause blindness. They say it'll cause divorce. It'll say it causes to eat pork. It says it'll cause you to die.
It'll cause blindness.
But why? Like, you know, surprisingly, none of the sources after the Gemara.
Well, so. I think it's pretty clear that everybody sort of admits that the salt is not something that you can really. You don't really have much to lean on there in terms of a reason for doing this today. That's clear. We don't have salt which blinds your eyes. So you're going to have to go in one of the other directions. And so if we're going to come up, if we're going to understand that you have to do this today, it has to be for some other reason. Let's talk about some of the details here in terms of what's going on. The practice today, as I mentioned before, is that women do not do this. Even in places where men do it, women do not do this. And so the question is, why? Who can tell me, based on what we've seen so far, why women would not be doing this?
They don't lead the benching.
Okay, but assuming that everybody's going to wash their hands, even not just the piece of person who's leading the benching. And that's basically the answer. It's not clear at all why...
Because they're like preparing the soup, so they would have salt on.
Okay, but that's not a reason not to do it.
No.
Right? If you're benching and you're at the meal, so this is, I found, as I was looking into this, it's always intrigued me, and as I was looking into this more, I realized that it's also intrigued lots of other people who did not find a strong reason why women are not supposed to be doing this. And in fact, there are many poskim who have said, I brought you one example from Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was like one of the big poskim, you know, in the previous generation in Israel, who said, well, we don't understand, they couldn't come up with a good reason why women are not doing this. It was true historically in pre-war Europe that there were places where they were just the practice was already then that women were not doing this, but it's not clear exactly what the basis for that is. So you see here, this is from a book called Halichot Bat Yisrael, which has a bunch of halachas for women. And he says there, in the main body, this is a footnote, but in the main body of the text, he says their obligation for my machronim is the same for women as it is for men. And then he cites the conversation that he had with Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He said, "Ken Amar li Hagaon Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Shlita v'hosif." And he added that perhaps the Yitachin Shehanashim She'enan Makpidot Lintol Mistamchot al ma'asa muva b'gemar. Maybe the fact that women are not doing this is because they're relying on this, on the stories we saw in the Gemara about how serious it is to not do this properly. There was a woman who ended up getting divorced because she didn't do the Mayim Achronim properly, or somebody died because they didn't do it properly.
No, it says the woman, not because she didn't do it, where she did it and it caused her to be divorced.
It's talking about a case where they're lax. There's a parallel. Mayim Achronim, because of Mayim Achronim, because of a laxity, though. It caused the situation, and therefore they keep themselves, they don't want to accept this this stringency on themselves, so they don't do it. But he says, avaladato, as far as he's concerned, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, ein lehem al malis. There isn't really a reason why women are not doing this. Makom shenogim ha'anashim litol, gam al-anashim limhoken, and in a place where men, in a situation where nobody does it, so we know why nobody does it, because there's reasons why nobody does it. In a place where everybody does it, he doesn't see why women should not be doing it. I'm not telling anybody to do anything, but there are, you know, a series of serious people, of serious halakhic authorities who just said, I don't know why women are not doing this. There doesn't seem to be any reason. You know, I mean, if we just think about the reasons we have, salt is a problem. Everybody's going to bench at the end of the meal, so why not? Any event, so that's a curiosity. It's in terms of the way that we practice today. It's just something people aren't really sure why exactly that's the case. That's in terms of our do women do this or not? How much of your hand do you need to wash? Yes.
You yourself, yes. If you happen to eat something with your hands, would you not do my machroni?
If your hands are
for any other reasons?
If your hands are dirty at the end of the, I think that the bottom line seems to be salt is not really
part
of
the dirty
equation.
Hands.
If your hands are dirty, then you have to, yeah. Okay. You have to wash them. But if they're not dirty, then maybe not. So how much of your hand do you have to wash? So this comes back to this question of how much water is really involved here. How much water do you need to use? And we really don't find, at least according to most people, what we find in other places with water from before the meal. It's very stringent. You have to use a certain amount. If you have a cup, you have to fill up or whatever. Here, it's basically, the idea seems to be you need as much water as it takes to clean off your hands. So the Shulchan Aruch suggests, Ein tzarich litol ela ad perek sheni shel ha'etzpo. You have to wash until the second knuckle on your fingers. And on your which is here, right? And on your thumb until the first, because you only have two joints on your thumb, so you can't wash the whatever. But on your thumb until there, that's what the Shulchan Aruch suggests. And we see the Mishnah Brura rails against another thing, which is interesting, seems to be common practice today, which is that you take a little few drops of water and you sort of smush it into your hands, and that's it. He says it's not reaching anywhere if you do that. I'm not saying this. This is Mishnah Berurah. We see this here also, so we can see this inside.
You
get there and it's not. We have these like little. You saw this thing I showed you at the beginning, right? It's tiny. It's like this big. It's not that much smaller. I mean, it is smaller than it actually is, but it's like this big. When I looked for this picture, I saw a bunch of really cute ones. They had ones that are like a little water well pump, or they had one that was like a sprinkler for like a can for watering flowers, like a mini one, and a little dish at the bottom. But they're all tiny. That's the point. None of them have any water in there. So how much water can there really be for? And it's expected that it'll be enough for everyone at the table. You know, there's 20 people at the table. You have a little. So what is that? So the Mishnah Berurah is very upset about this. He says, as we have here in source 13. I want to read in English, because filth from fruit does not generally reach above the second knuckle. You have to wash to the second knuckle, because if you're eating with your hands, you know, usually it's this part of your fingers, generally speaking, that gets really dirty. And on the thumb, one must wash until the first knuckle. If the food did reach above this point, one should wash above the second knuckle as well. The goal is to clean your hands off, so you shouldn't be like, oh, well, I got it until here, but this whole part of my hand is dirty, so wash that part of your hand. I've been very troubled from seeing people who are careful to use afterwaters, but they do not fulfill the obligation of the law at all, because they only put a few drops of water on their fingertips, which don't even reach the first knuckle. Sometimes they attempt to fulfill the requirement by just touching the water, and their hands remain as dirty as and filthy from the food as they were initially. And the truth is that fundamentally, one must wash, at least until the second knuckle. This is the view of the Mishnah Berurah. The Vilna Gaon also had a view that you should wash with even more water, and this is something that people do. If you, many people, not many, but whatever, but I've definitely seen people do this. Instead of using the thing that you bring to the table, they'll go to the sink and take the washing cup and just pour water in their hands one time each, and that's the end of the story. And then you're okay. So that's another factor. It's interesting. I don't know. There must be defense of all the common practice today, but that's another interesting thing where the common practice is to use drops of water. And at least as far as the Mishnah Berurah is concerned, it's not clear why that is.
Evidently, it's become just symbolic.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like if you're doing it, then you should do it. If you're not doing it, then. But okay, another element here. There's a couple other interesting things just in terms of etiquette. We know that we saw in this thing, you wash from onto your hand and you wash it into another receptacle, right? Usually the bottom, there's like a dish or something in there that's a receptacle. Well, why do we do that? Why don't you just wash it onto your plate or something, which is also a receptacle, I guess, or onto the ground, which I guess we wouldn't do. So you got to put it somewhere. But the fact that it goes into a receptacle is on purpose. Why is that? It's because of our old friend that we've seen a few times called Ruach Ra, an evil spirit, or a spirit of, it's unclear, it's some sort of, the assumption as we've talked about before is that there's some sort of medical possible harm that could come out of different kinds of water and different kinds of things in different circumstances. The understanding was that Ruach Ra can sprout up and that can harm people. That was the main issue in leaving the garlic out overnight. That was an issue we saw in terms of washing your hands in the morning. And also, it's an issue here. So this is the Shulchan Aruch in 14. My machronim ein notlin al gabe karka ela bekli. You only wash them, you don't spill them onto the ground, you spill them into a vessel, into some sort of container, mipnei ruach ra sheshor alim, because this spirit comes to rest on them, and that can be dangerous. Ve'ein im ein lo kli, notel gabe etzim dakim v'kiyotzbem, if you have nothing to put them into, then you spill them onto like pine, like some sort of little area which will absorb the water, and the water won't end up running over the floor, or people will step on it, or it could be a problem. So that's why people put it into a vessel. A lot of people have a custom to cover it, and that was, I couldn't exactly see exactly how that fit in here. It may have to do with this Kabbalistic reason that we saw before. And then a final oddity, a couple of little etiquette points. One thing is that there's actually a sequence which is prescribed. Who washes first? Who is the person that washes first? So this is something which is prescribed. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. Also don't see it practiced a lot today. And the rule is as follows. If you have up to five people in the meal, the person that's going to lead the benching should wash first so that it gives him time to review the benching while everybody else is washing, and he'll be ready to say things properly. Up to five people. If you have more than five people, then you start with the person of least stature, which was the assumption was at a certain point. The person of least stature is usually the person sitting at certain point in history, the person sitting at the end of the table. You start with them, and then you pass it up the table. You don't have to figure out who's the second least in stature and whatever, and until you get to five people. And then, I guess it wasn't so, like people understood that this is what, nobody does that today anyway. And until you get up to five people left, and then you give it to the person that's going to lead the benching, so he has time to review the brachas. That's the rule that we see over here in 14. And a final point, which is also something that people do, and this plays into this concept of etiquette, is that the Mishnah Berurah notes that after you wash, we know that before the meal, after you at a certain point, you're not supposed to talk. Is it right after you wash? Is it after you make the bracha for hamotzi before you eat the bread? But usually people don't talk for either of those spans of time. But presumably, if we were just using the reasons that we saw, there's no reason here to have a problem of not talking, because the not talking idea is that there has to be a continuity between a bracha that I made and an action that I do. Is usually how that works. Here, there's no bracha, and you're just washing your hands, and it has nothing. It's not connected inherently with the benching that you make at the end. Nevertheless, Some people quote from the Arizal, which is another Kabbalistic source, that you shouldn't talk after you've done this washing until you start the benching. And that the Mishnah Berurah quotes this. I don't have it on the source sheet because I didn't want to scare you so much that there are three pages. But the Mishnah Berurah actually writes that a person shouldn't talk, and that's something that you see practiced in some places. So and some people do this, some people don't. So if you're somewhere and somebody does the Mayim Achronim and then they're not talking to you, they're not being rude, they're just following this Mishnah Berurah that says that you're not supposed to talk in between the washing and when you do the benching. So that's the idea. So basically, just to recap what we've seen, we saw that there are two basic sources of this concept of Mayim Achronim. One of them has to do with salt, Melech Sdomi, so that you don't get it in your eyes. One of them has to do with cleaning your hands off before you pray, before we say Birkat HaMazon. We saw three different views about how to balance these two sources, these two reasons, and also a Kabbalistic view. And we saw that in terms of how that plays out, it gets very muddled. At a certain stage, the Ashkenazi practice was not to do this. Sephardi practice was to do it. And at the present stage, since more things have been mixed in, at least amongst Ashkenazim, some people do this and some people don't. And we've talked about some of these details. Should women be doing this? How much of your hand do you have to wash? Should you be talking in between? And so on. So that's a little bit of an idea. This concept of Mayim Achronim, more complicated than you may think, but at least next time now, at least for me, when I see this next time in meal, I'll know exactly what's going on. So I'll feel better about it.
Maybe yes.
Yes. Maybe. Okay. Thank you.